British economy, and maybe I'm less opposed to it than I thought I would be. Because whether we like it or not, the self-service nation is growing in strength.
Thank you for using the fast lane.
Self-Service Nation was presented by Ian Marchant, and the producer in Bristol was Mark Smalley.
Between 1825 and 1850 was when a leech had its heyday.
Nature and us.
You would be able to go into your local pharmacy and you could even rent a leech, which is just an absolutely disgusting idea now because they are very strictly one-person use.
Gold ones and red ones and pink ones. There's a connoisseurship of patterns on a carp like you might have on a horse or a cat or a dog.
Brett Westwood touches on our links to the natural world.
We have this in common. Every one of us has been walked over by a fly.
The return of Natural Histories on Tuesday morning at 11 and then on the BBC Radio 4 website.
Now on Radio 4, we have a stand-up comedian telling stories and making some jokes about what life is like with dyslexia. This is Michael Fabry's Dyslexicon.
Just not trying.
Concentrate, child.
There's no excuse for poor spelling.
Are you just stupid?
He's thick. I told you he was thick.
There's nothing wrong with you. You're just lazy.
Read the words.
Read the words.
You didn't. Question. Stupid. Just tell me what it says on the list. Read the words.
You're on the wrong train.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
This is a comedy show about dyslexia. Now, I don't like dyslexic jokes. They don't offend me as a dyslexic, they offend me as a comedian. A typical dyslexic joke is something like, did you hear about the dyslexic agnostic who stayed awake all night wondering if there was a dog? We get confused with spelling, not concepts. You might spell God, D-O-G, but we know the difference between a deity and a Doberman. That said, I did see one joke online I like. How many dyslexic light bulb take? Not funny, but an accurate reflection of the condition. In this episode, we focus on my life after school, where my dyslexia was known about and understood. But after that, my struggles weren't exactly over.
So I struggled a fair amount through my school life. Like, I kind of did badly at GCSEs and then managed to get some bad A-levels and I went to a bad university. I forget I went to university. I only remember I went to university because every now and then the student loans company writes me going, now? No. You made a seriously bad investment there. I went through the clearing system. You know, the clearing system is like where you want to go to Cambridge to do geography, you end up going to Luton to do spoon bending. You have to pretend you're really pleased. I'm really interested in spoon bending, so I'm really happy about that. Quite good system clearing. I think they should use it for other things. I think they should use it for young people who are struggling to lose their virginity. Because you get young people who don't want to do it when they're getting desperate. Oh, God, I couldn't even get into my third choice. University was an interesting experience. Do you know what really annoyed me there, though, was buck passing. And it annoyed me all the way through my school life. I think it happens in your second year, where you as a class don't know how to do something, and the teacher says, you should have learnt this last year, and doesn't explain it. And then it's still a problem when you reach higher education. Like, you just think, take a minute out of your day, somebody explain the apostrophe. Like... I did English and film studies. That was a mistake. Well, the English I enjoyed, but because English, just weirdly, the subjects I was okay at, despite being completely incapable of spelling. But film studies, I worked out 2 years in, I was actually interested in film trivia. So I was thinking, I don't think anyone's going to ask me Harrison Ford's middle name. So I got that, and I had this degree, and I did what anyone with an English and film studies degree would do. I went to the job centre to sign on, and the very worst thing that could ever happen to you when you go into a job centre happened to me. They gave me a job. In the job centre, I was like, no, hang on, I'm here for the free money. No, you can have a job with us. Come. It's just a temp job. And I temped there for 8 years. I used to like working in the job centre when a big disaster happens around the world because we do a 2-minute silence, and I love that because the manager would never lock the door before the 2-minute silence started, and you get a lot of messed up people coming in job centres. They used to walk in off the street and think time had stopped. Everyone's just stood like really still, just staring. We're in the middle of a 2-minute silence once, and this drug addict walks in. He saw everyone standing around still, and he goes, I've got a sign on, what's going on? And she said, we're having a 2-minute silence, sir. And he went, oh, what? How long's that going to take? I met a lot of people when I worked in the job centre who also had problems with literacy. They couldn't read. They'd been in prison a lot of the time. I always wonder what they'd send people to prison and they wouldn't teach them to read in prison. I mean, talk about a captive audience. But they didn't teach people to read. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. Like, I mean, I think they just thought they were just going to swan out like the Count of Monte Cristo or something. Like, it's just, oh, fortunately, a Latin polymath tunneled into my cell, and ever since then, I'm truly educated. You see a lot of people in job centres who haven't learned to read and things like that. I don't think that successive governments, it was Labour back then, Conservatives now, I don't think they really understand the psychology of failure. People get sent on courses and they fail too much in their life and they wouldn't last, and then they come back off these courses. And then the government still has this thing of sanctioning benefit. They cut their money. I remember I was reading a politician recently because their sanctioning has gone up really badly, and they said, well, we have to sanction people's benefit. It's an incentive. It's an incentive for them to do better. I've seen people having their money sanctioned. I saw people crying. I saw people getting angry. I saw people begging. I never once saw anybody go, well, there's nothing else for it. I'm just going to have to set up a small business. I think that they should teach people to read in prison, surely. You can be left-wing about it or right-wing about it. You could be left-wing and go, OK, well, people have had a very bad start in life. They need a lot of counselling. They need one-to-one tuition. We could get voluntary people in. We could really... Because I believe anyone can learn to read eventually. Most people can, even if they're dyslexic. I think they can do it. So, yeah, you could be left-wing about it. Or you could be really right-wing about it. You could just chuck a Barbara Cartland novel in there so you can't leave till you're finished. I'm really horrible. If it was maybe a really horrible prisoner, so they've got to sit there going... And the prince said that he loved me. And then we got married.
Just tell me what it says on the list. Read the words.
Another thing dyslexia is known to affect is memory. I discovered a way to tackle this, a memory house. This is when you hang things you want to learn on pre-existing memories that are more hardwired, such as a family home. So I filled the house I grew up in with historical figures I wanted to remember. But you need to keep it maintained. I was playing Trivial Pursuit recently, and when I went back, they'd wrecked the joint. Hello? Hello? Can anyone tell me which war Florence Nightingale was associated with? Hello?
Sorry, I am Cleopatra, and this milk has gone off. Where have you been?
Sorry about that. Are you Florence Nightingale?
I am Joan of Arc. Don't you know anything?
That's kind of why I put you here.
That was a long time ago, little man.
I'm very sorry. And you're not Florence Nightingale either, are you?
No, I'm Mary Queen of Scots. And you told me to stand next to this fireplace and hold this cucumber? Why?
I can't remember. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, I'm looking for Florence... Well, I'm looking for where Florence Nightingale went to war.
I do not know who she is.
Have you seen a nurse anywhere?
I have not seen a nurse. I would not know the nurse if I saw her. You just made me stand here with this big bony M.
Oh, you're Rasputin!
That makes no sense to me. I do not understand the connection.
Doesn't have to make sense to you. Just has to make sense to me. So...
But if she was in a battle, there are generals upstairs. Try up there.
Oh, hi. Who are you?
Who am I? I am General Napoleon Bonaparte.
You've not seen Florence Nightingale anywhere, have you?
I do not know who Florence Nightingale is.
I'm playing Trivial Pursuit. I really need to know...
Oh, you're playing games? You're playing games. Look, I'm lost in this crazy house. I do not know... Where I am or what I am doing here.
You're supposed to be in my childhood bedroom.
Well, have you seen the state of your childhood bedroom? I could not stand it in there anymore. How long have those plates and the food been under your bed? I could not stand the smell of it, and I am French! Oh, playing a quiz, are we? Having fun times, are we?
I'm just playing a quiz.
All right, all right.
Please help.
Oh, well, I'm having real problems here. I don't know where I am in this crazy house. Cry me a river.
Cry me a river. Cry me a moor. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Take me with you.
I am never going in my memory house again. Or playing Trivial Pursuit, for that matter.
There are a lot of books. There's one called The Gift of Dyslexia. I tried that. I didn't really get it, and I didn't like the title, The Gift of Dyslexia. The failure, the bullying, the disappointment. It's the gift that keeps on giving, it really is. There is one book called The Dyslexic Advantage, and they have a good website of the same name. I like that book because it attempts to separate dyslexics into subtypes and gives lots of examples of dyslexics who've done well. That said, you do get loads of that. You get these really strange, disparate examples that you're supposed to be inspired by. People say, did you know Richard Branson is dyslexic? And so were the Chuckle Brothers. And it does that thing loads of books that try and inspire you do. They say things like, Winston really struggled at school and he was ridiculed by his father, but he pressed on and eventually Winston Churchill became Prime Minister. When you're dyslexic, you get called stupid quite a lot. It happens all the time. And I'm quite curious about notions of stupidity, right? Because I don't know what you consider particularly stupid. I find certain things I do find extremely stupid. Superstition I find stupid. So I think superstition is an insult to victims of genuine bad fortune. You wouldn't say, have you heard about Dave? He's been in a car crash. He's lost his leg.
Well, shouldn't leave his Christmas decorations up so long, should he?
Is it stupid to be religious? I don't think it's stupid to be religious. My cat's religious. He sort of is. I put a crucifix on his collar. But this is a little tip to you all. Cats look brilliant with crucifixes on them. They look so pious the way they stand and just look at you. They're judging you. That's great. I've been putting crucifixes on cats that come into my garden. They aren't my cats. But I like the idea of them going home to where they live and their owners seeing them going, oh, my God. Did you put a crucifix on Basil? He's wearing one. But then I see the cat again, and they've left the crucifix on. It's like they're respecting the cat's faith. If this is a decision, we'll stand by him. But it's rather strange for a cat. I don't think religious people are stupid. Some of them are, though. Like, creationists are stupid people. I used to work with a creationist guy in the job centre. So I asked him the question that you ask all creationists. I said to him, well, where do you think the dinosaurs came from? And he said, ah, you see, this is very interesting, Mike. The dinosaurs are way older than 6,000 years old, but the Earth is not. Because what happened is that God has made many worlds, and when he's had enough of one, he destroys and Armageddons it, and then he makes new worlds with the bits of the old worlds. So that's where the dinosaurs come from the old bits. And I was pretty blown away by that, to be honest. I was a little bit hippie. Like, I don't know what you call that as an evolutionary theory. The Lego theory, I imagine. Yeah, like I say, stupidity and intelligence meet in certain places. And I think it's really sad when people... Because I've struggled with my intellect, and I really try and read books and educate myself. And I get annoyed when I meet people like conspiracy theorists. I don't like conspiracy theorists because they know so much about conspiracies. So when you're having an argument with them, it's really, you can't argue your point because they've made all theirs up. So you have to go, look, you know more about this than me, but the nothing I know is right. You know, it's hard to learn stuff, but it's better to have a sparsely furnished intellectual flat than a mansion of horse manure.
Read the words.
Read the words.
I clawed my way up to a decent level of literacy, primarily through reading along to audiobooks. Audiobooks are a vital weapon in the war against dyslexia. It wasn't the books they wanted me to read, though. It was actually James Herbert books that gave me a love of reading, full of explicit sex and violence. But the fact is, I was engaged. Engagement is key. Now, I can happily read anything, but I'm still prone to the most ridiculous errors.
When I make mistakes, I do try and apologise assertively for my errors, because I do make And the thing is, I always found that if you're going to get too, well, I'm so sorry, then you end up feeling really bad about yourself. But, oh God, I do some stupid things. Because for me, when I read, I have to, you know those old magic eye pictures that were popular a few years ago? You have to sort of tune in. And that's how reading is for me. So I make errors. I was in Bristol and I got a last minute gig, which meant I had to stay in overnight. And I was directed to a street of B&Bs. And I was walking up the street and saw these signs, B&B. One of the things had a price under it. And it was quite cheap. But, oh, that looks good. And I went up to knock on the door. But it didn't say B&B. It said MOT. And I just hadn't noticed. And I went up to this door and a bloke came out of the garage next door to the house that it was attached to because it was a garage. And he said, could I help you there? And I said, oh, yeah, I was just, so we signed, I wonder if you had any availability. And he went, actually, I've just had a cancellation as it happens. And I said, oh, that's great, can you fit me in? Yeah, yeah, sure. Where's your motor? Oh, no, just me. A moment of silence passed between us. It was a bit homoerotic, to be honest with you. I need an MOT. Where's your car? Oh, I haven't got a car. I just need an MOT. I am long overdue. Then I saw he was covered in oil and bits of car strewn everywhere. And I looked back at the sign, MOT. And I just, like I said, I apologised assertively. So I just looked him in the eye and went, I'm sorry, I thought this was a hotel. And I even threw in a good day.
Properly.
I just don't want to be called stupid for my spelling mistakes, but I am stupid. I do stupid things all the time. I'll give you some examples. I went to see the band Elbow. That's not the stupid thing. And you know, if you go to a live band, you might stand behind your boyfriend or girlfriend, put your arms around the front of them and just move to the music like that. We were doing that, and it was all quite sort of soft and romantic, and she put her head back on my shoulder. It was nice, and our cheeks were touching. And I put my hand up her T-shirt and felt her belly button ring. She hasn't got a belly button ring. My girlfriend was stood 10 feet away. And I was like, oh, my God, who's this? I was just grabbed a total stranger. They're very crowded, these gigs. I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do? I'm just going to wait till the end of the song. Elbow songs are long. I didn't realise how long they were. I just was, oh, no, no, no. And then eventually my girlfriend looked round and I was mouthing her going, I don't know who this is. I'm really sorry. Eventually the song stopped and I just let go and just ran. And I was stood trying to explain myself to my girlfriend and I saw this girl's real boyfriend come back with two glasses of wine. Now, I couldn't hear the conversation, but I think it went something along the lines of, where have you been? I've been at the bar. Well, who has been groping me for the last 10 minutes? This is another stupid thing I did. This is brilliant. I was in Next with my girlfriend and I put some clothes on and went out to show her. They weren't suitable. I went back into the changing rooms, went into the wrong cubicle and put on another man's clothes. hear me out. There was a guy stood just to the left as I walked in and his girlfriend was there and she was just pulling at his shirt going, oh, that's really nice. It's huggy, but it's not too huggy. That really suits you. That's really nice. And I walked towards my girlfriend and my stuff and I walked towards her and she just went, no! And I just U-turned and sort of sulked my way back into the change room. She didn't even look properly. I think it looks good. And I was sulking and in one of the cubicles there was a pair of jeans and a black T-shirt, which is what I had been wearing, and I went and I started putting on this other guy's clothes. I didn't even notice when I put his jeans on. But it's only when I put his black T-shirt on that I looked in the mirror and there was a camper van on it. And even then I didn't twig. I just went, where's that camper van come from? I can't park there. I'm going to driven on. And then I saw the shoes. Go, those aren't my shoes. Oh, my God, these are my clothes. And I panicked and I leapt out of the cubicle and this man was just stood in front of me. Now, remember what I said about when you make a mistake, you must apologise assertively. It doesn't always work, to be honest. Because I went, I'm sorry, I'm wearing your clothes. I'll take them off. And I went back into the cubicle. And this is, I get really annoyed, and this is probably hypocritical of me, but I get really annoyed if someone reacts stupidly to my stupidity. because he said, there better not be any money missing, mate. What pickpocket puts on the clothes of their victim? The best apology I ever saw was in Brighton. It started snowing just all of a sudden, and the roads iced up, and Brighton is very hilly, and people started crashing their cars in the ice. But people were crashing their cars really slowly. They were just like slowly smashing into each other. But I saw one guy, he had his window wound down, he was leaning out, and he was apologising during a car crash.
Excuse me, madam. Oh, dear me. Oh, look out! Excuse me, I'm so dreadfully sorry about that. Oh, look out! Oh, my word! I'm so sorry about it, I really am. Yes, still the same crash. No, please, I'll pop back in a couple of minutes with my insurance details. I'll only be about 10 yards away.
So, I read well now. I even got a degree in the end. But whether it's psychosomatic or something about the way my brain processes information, I still find reading out loud to people terrifying.
I've been going out with this girl for about 2 weeks, and then her grandfather died and she was devastated. And I said, is there anything I can do? And she said, oh, please, can you drive me to Devon for the funeral? And what I said was, of course, yeah, that's no problem at all. And what I thought was, Devon? Known you for 2 weeks. I honestly meant, like, maybe she'd like a sandwich. And I drove her to Devon, and the funeral started, and I ended up on the front row because I was with her. And somebody, I never remember who it was, but somebody was supposed to read a poem. Now, I've got to be honest with you, I do not get on with poetry. It's not poetry's fault, it's my fault. I don't like it because I always lose the thread of it. I don't understand. And people say quite pretentious things about poetry, like, oh my God, you can say so much more in a poem in a few lines than it takes a novel 300 pages to say. A poem wouldn't make a very good whodunit, would it? A thriller. Andy McNab in verse. Gone Girl, the poem. I didn't kill her. The police just scoffed. I got on for murder. She was hiding in the loft. Because I get confused with... poems always start so beautifully and then I totally lose the thread. So it'll start with something nice like, floating in an ocean of despair, hope drowns first, but misery is a life preserver forever buoyant. But like wet ham, we slip between the cold of the dying swan, its feathers like lozenges, loosening the phlegm of Christ's Greek lawnmower. Hang on, back up. You lost me at wet ham there. So, I was in this front row with this funeral. Best seats. And it was somebody's turn to read a poem, and everyone was in tears. They were all just incapable of moving. I'm not going to call her my girlfriend. This girl just handed me the bit of paper off someone, and I was going, no. And I just, please. And I just thought, I'm 25 now, I can do this. And I got up in front of these crying people and was shaking, holding this bit of paper. And it was that Four Weddings and a Funeral one. As Stop All the Clocks, you know that poem. And I just, so I went, stop all the, and then I said an accidental rude word that rhymes with clocks. Cut off the telephone, prevent dogs, woof, no, barking. Silence pianos, and bring out the coffin. Let the moaners come. The moaners. Yeah, look, I know you're sad he's dead, but enough with the whining! I went all the way through this poem, just murdering it. And then I just sat back down and just... they stopped crying. It was more a glare I was getting from them. Afterwards, I was at the cake bit. And I couldn't... And I couldn't find anyone to talk to me. I ended up cornering this man and I was saying, oh, it's a nice send-off. And he was like, it should have been. Just trying to make conversation. Quite an old guy, had a good innings. Funny, isn't it? They call it a good innings. If someone dies young, you don't say, ooh, out for a duck. My girlfriend's lovely. She's very, very patient with me, and I need to be with a patient woman. I make errors. I make lots and lots of errors, like, all the time. Like, if the remote control goes missing, you look in the usual places, but you also have to check the fridge. And I've had previous girlfriends that say, why did you leave it in the fridge? Like, there's an answer. Like, I thought it'd keep longer. The only thing I struggle with her sometimes is she doesn't make me watch subtitled films. And I struggle with subtitled films. They talk too quickly. Like, what's the bridge? And it's just that woman saying, we must get to the house quickly to stop the... You're right. There's a terrible danger that someone could be... Yes. And I think I know who it is. It's... I think you're right. Well, what are we going to... Well, very quickly. Well, and well, what about Kevin? I don't know...
He's thick. I told you he was thick.
Whatever intelligence I have, it was hard won. And I get really annoyed when I see people that don't appreciate the brains that they have. This is particularly common in the sane world of the internet.
I think people should appreciate their intelligence a little bit. And a lot of the time, you just see people nitpicking at each other. They don't really care about the actual conversation a lot of the time. And there's a good example. This years ago, I was reading this article about China on the internet. And it was a really interesting article. But underneath the article, people left comments. A debate started. I'd take part in these debates, but you just get bullied. The first comment about China was wrong. They said, China's a terrible country. They make everybody have a child. And the person underneath that wrote, you feeble-minded idiot. It's a maximum of one child. Kill yourself. Which is a bit much, and if you were out and somebody said, is it true in China you've got to have a child? You would say, no, that's wrong. Kill yourself. But these comments get mental. The one thing that when China's a terrible country, it's a dictatorship, you can't trust them. The next person, oh, that's typically xenophobic response to a newly industrialised nation, gone are the days where China consisted of a few people growing rich on tea. And then the person underneath that wrote, I love rich tea. It is my favourite biscuit. And the next person said, no, you're wrong about China. It's a young and vibrant country now. The young people are taking over. The next person said, rich tea's your favourite biscuit. You're mental. That's the most boring biscuit in the world. Then the next person said, I think you're forgetting about Tiananmen Square. And the next person said, I've never tried a Tiananmen Square. Are they any good for dunking? The next person said, dunking was the worst leader China ever had.
So, what's the big deal about dyslexia exactly? Is it really that bad? Of course, there are far worse things in the world. But put it this way, lots of extremely successful entrepreneurs are dyslexic. Not only that, they even say it helped them. But they also all say the same thing. They wouldn't wish it on their kids. There are a lot of people out there who think we shouldn't get extra help, who say we shouldn't get free computers, who think it should be a level playing field and we don't deserve extra time in exams. But after making these programmes and revisiting my past, I've suddenly realised the answer. I've had a massive epiphany that not only affects all the dyslexic people in the world, but everybody. It's going to change humanity. What we need to do
now, hang on,
is...
that's it. Thank you very much.
Just hang on
Thank
a second.
Thank you, Michael. Pen's down.
I'm nearly
Pens
finished.
Pen's down, Michael. You're out of time.
L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart, and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart, and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart, and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart, and you're going your own way.
Dyslexicon was written and performed by Michael Fabry. Additional voices were provided by Julia Sutherland and Stuart Murphy. It was produced by Richard Melvin at Dabster Productions for BBC Radio 4.
It's the police.
A new series of a small town murder comes to BBC Radio 4.
Mrs. Dixon, I'm DC Jackie Hartwell, West Midlands CID.
Starring Mira Sayal.
I told her I'll keep her informed of the investigation's progress, answer any questions, offer support.
In other words, be her family liaison officer.
Gov.
A Small Town Murder, next Monday to Friday at 10:45 in the morning and 7:45 in the evening on BBC Radio 4.
BBC News at midday. The coroner at the second inquest into the death of an army recruit at the Deep Cut Barracks in Surrey in 1995 has said it's regrettable there wasn't a more thorough investigation at the time. The coroner has begun delivering his verdict in the case of Private Cheryl James, who died of a single bullet wound to the head. Andy Moore reports from Woking.
The coroner, Brian Barker, said the parents of Miss James had waited far too long for a proper examination of their daughter's death. He said Des and Doreen James had shown patience and loving fortitude in the 21 years since she died. The army decided that Cheryl James had committed suicide after a brief investigation. The coroner said it was regrettable that a more thorough inquiry had not been carried out. If it had been, there would be quality evidence available now. The coroner is expected to spend more than 3 hours reading his 100-page conclusion.
A rescue operation is underway in the Mediterranean after a boat carrying migrants capsized more than 60 miles off Crete. It's thought up to 700 people could have been on board. The Greek Coast Guard says more than 300 people have been rescued. The details from Tom Afesi.
The boat was described as a large fishing vessel with many migrants seen in distress in the water. Greek coast guards have sent two ships. Three helicopters and a plane are also involved in the rescue operation. Five cargo boats that were sailing nearby have joined in. Crete lies north of Libya and Egypt. It's so far been rare to see migrants landing on the island. But on Wednesday, a group of more than 100 Afghans were the first big arrival there since the migrant crisis began.
Paris is bracing itself for water levels on the River Seine to peak after heavy rain and flooding which have affected countries across Europe. The floods have killed at least 15 people, most of them in Germany. Two people have died in France. The French Environment Minister Ségolène Royal fears more bodies will be found as the floods subside.
When you fly over the area, you still see hundreds of houses, businesses and camping sites that have been affected. So there is still a fear that as the waters recede, we will find more victims. And then all the reconstruction work will take a long time.
The American bank JP Morgan has said that a vote to leave the EU may force it to transfer jobs from Britain to other parts of Europe. The company employs about 16,000 people across the UK. Its chief executive, Jamie Dimon, said that after a Brexit vote, it would have to reorganise its business, and that could mean up to 4,000 jobs being moved to Europe. A group campaigning for young people to vote in the EU referendum claims many are being put off registering as a voter because of the need to provide a national insurance number. Bite the Ballot says thousands of people have tried to sign up online, only to abandon the process. Greg Dawson from Radio 1's Newsbeat has the details.
Bite the Ballot say that between the 23rd and 27th of May,